Good afternoon and welcome into another hour of Woods and Water, South Carolina. Sorry I wasn't here last week.
It wasn't Corona.
It wasn't Corona.
You still had smell and taste.
It was a good old-fashioned head and chest cold.
You were.
That lasted a few days.
He didn't come out of the basement for a very long time.
I did do the thing of, you know, kind of quarantining myself away from everybody and trying to keep from spreading. Sophie hadn't got sick yet, has she? She spent a heck of a lot of time downstairs with me last week. So if anybody was going to get it, she was going to get it. I don't think she's got it, so we're good. Taylor got a real treat for people today.
I do?
Oh, come on. The guest we've got coming on with us?
Seeing as how I bring a lot to the show, I know you weren't meaning my music because you took my music away from me.
It's Christmas time. We're listening to Christmas music. Uh-huh. Yes. So we're talking to who?
I don't know, Dad. Who are we talking to? You asked me, but
I ask you. Yeah.
Rob Simbeck.
About what?
His new book.
Which is what?
The Southern Wildlife Watcher. Notes of a Naturalist.
Yeah. So Rob's going to be with us next segment, and I don't know how long we'll go, but it'll be fun. Mm-hmm. Rob is a legend in Nashville. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. On the country music side, go to robsimbeck.com. You'll figure out real quick who he is.
Yeah, robsimbeck.com.
But he's got a new book out. We're going to talk about the book. You can get the book online. I think he's got a M. Judson bookseller, I think, here in town is going to have some, too. I think that's what he told me. So, anyway, it's going to be a good one. Don't really have a calendar other than it's Christmas time. Mm-hmm. A great time of the year. Made it through Thanksgiving. Had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Hope y'all did too. Sorry about the repeat last week, but yeah, it just wasn't gonna happen. No radio show had been last week.
I don't think y'all wanted me to just take over the show and listen
to
this.
No, they're not ready for that.
All hour long.
They're not ready for that at all. got some news. The Bassmaster Opens have wrapped up for the year. And you've got some new elite anglers.
Major congrats to some of these guys.
Number one being Brian New.
Yep.
Go figure that one. I mean, Brian New 4 years ago at ICAST was actually the first time I met Brian was 2016 when I fished the FLW event down on Lake Hartwell. Hmm. Brian was practicing with Brian. Oopsie, I told you. Comes back and gets me every once in a while. Anyway, Brian New was practicing with Brian Thrift, and I was practicing with Matt Airy, and we pulled up beside him at the ramp. This is how Brian New was back then. We pulled up beside him at the ramp as they had loaded their boat, and Matt and I were getting ready to pull out. Mm-hmm. And he pulled up, and he goes, "Watch this." He tapped me, he goes, "Hey, Thrift, you find anything?" And Brian's like, "He said, what did I tell you?" He said, "Watch this." He goes, "Hey, New, did y'all find anything?" As we drove off, he goes, "Man, Thrift's already corrupted, New." So, yeah, congratulations. Brian New, Belmont, North Carolina. He's the overall angler of the year title, invitation to 2021 Elite Series, and I'm sure he's taking it. Keith Carson, DeBerry, Florida, is another one that's going to get one. Let's see who else is going to get him. Brian New, so Justin Atkins will go from MLF probably to Bassmaster.
Matt Robertson.
Mark
Frazier.
Yeah.
Who is my
Matt Robertson borrowed Aiden Somerville's mm-hmm. boat down at Hartwell for that open because his boat broke down. That's from the Eastern Division. That's overalls. New, Atkins, Robertson, and Frazier.
In Central Opens, Jason Christie, Greg Hackney.
Some of these I am.
Yeah. Japanese. That's got to be Japanese.
And Daryl Gleason. So Christie and Hackney will go back to Bassmaster after leaving and being gone to MLF for 2 years. And then the Easterns, Joshua Strachner, Scott Martin from FLW will make it. Justin Hamner and KJ Queen. Interestingly enough, there's your first collegiate graduate from Bethel University. Powerhouse college team of Bethel University puts their first person in the Elite Series.
Wow.
So that's that. And with that, Taylor, you got the Elite schedule.
I do have
a
schedule.
Out. Well, your phone went dark.
My phone
if
did
you printed
go dark.
Things out, you wouldn't have that problem.
Well, listen. First up, which is February 11th through the 14th, St. John's River, Palatka, Florida.
Third year in a row they've started off on the St. John's.
Mm-hmm. And then, sorry, I'm looking on my phone here, and it's a little iffy.
Printed it out. It wouldn't be that way.
Don't lecture me. Here we go. February 25th through the 28th, the Tennessee River in Knoxville. March 19th through the 21st, Lake Ray Roberts. April 8th through 11th is Sabine River in Texas. April 22nd through the 25th, Lake Fork.
That would be the Texas Toyota Fest. They're going back to Lake Fork this year.
Mm-hmm. May 6th through the 9th is Neely Henry Lake in Alabama. May 20th through the 23rd is Lake Gunnersville, which I'm very excited about Gunnersville again.
Okay.
That lake, I don't know what about it, but I always get excited when I see my schedule.
Okay.
June 10th through the 13th is Pickwick. July 8th through the 11th is Lake Champlain. And July 15th through the 18th is St. Lawrence River.
There's that invitation. Patrick Walters wants us to come up on the Northern Swing to go smallmouth fishing.
Oh, is that happening?
It could be. I have to see how everything goes. But, yeah, I want to make a Northern Swing this year.
And we already talked about how this classic is going to be on Ray Roberts. And that one... That lake is a fairly new lake for a lot of people.
I've been on it once. In 2015, when you used to take the top 15 FLW guys and the top 15 bass guys and put them together on a lake, they had it was the Texas Toyota Fest back then. But Anthony Gagliardi made it and Brandon Cobb made it. Hmm. They were both invited because their finishes on the FLW tour. And so I flew down and was out on that lake, and it's a scary lake. In Texas, they don't cut down the trees when they make the lake, and it's flat enough where you don't get deep enough to get away from it. So you've got, like, the main lake is open, but then you've got these rows of, like, 12 by 12 posts. They're in straight lines, and on, like, the left-hand side would be, you know, wide open throttle, and on the right-hand side, it's wide open throttle if your foot will stay on the motor and you don't hit anything below the surface because there's standing timber all over the place.
Oh, great.
So it's an interesting lake. It'll be good. Now, we're hoping that stays. The classic and the classic, there is a plan based on how things are going that we may have to change things up on the classic this year. So we'll see. The MLF schedule is out too. March. Yeah, I guess it's Jasper 1, 2, 3. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So March 21st to March 26th, they're in Jasper, Texas. Oh, and they don't have the lakes listed here. So that's going to be, oh man, I can't remember the name of that lake. Okay. Anyway, stage 2. Well, actually they have heavy hitters, which is Raleigh, which is Falls Lake and a couple of those smaller ones. Then you've got Stage 3, Leesburg, Florida. Stage 4, Dayton, Tennessee. And they don't have the lakes here, which is really Messina, New York. Plattsburgh, New York is in August. And then St. Clair, Michigan, September. So they're stretching a little bit further in the thing. And then they've got the Red Crest out in Tulsa, Oklahoma on February 23rd through February 27th. So, and there could be a change there just depending on things go to. So, everything's still up in the air. Man, I'm ready to get back to the old way. Okay, well, got Rob Simbeck coming up, which is going to be a really fun interview, and I hope y'all enjoy it. And go check out his book, his website, and his book, The Southern Wildlife Watcher, Notes of a Naturalist, Rob Simbeck. And we'll be back with more Woods and Water, South Carolina on the other side. And it's Christmas time, so we're starting with the Christmas music.
I wonder what God wants. By now we ought to know what God wants for Christmas. Almost over, seems like time moves so fast.
What do you think, Taylor?
What do I think about what?
Music. You got last month, you got country music.
Yeah. And
it's December now, so I get Christmas music.
Y'all don't miss me too much. I'm still here. We'll do this again.
We'll mingle the music from here on out. How's that?
Really?
Yeah, we can.
Wow.
But you know, Taylor, I love doing shows with you, and I love having good guests on you, and I love even more when the guest brings his own music. Now, he didn't know he was supplying his own bumper music because I didn't tell him. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, if you go to this guy's website, he's got music, and it's music like that he wrote with someone, and I'm talking about Rob Simbeck, who, for those of you that love country music like Taylor, you'll recognize that name from the Bob Kingsley Show, and for those of you who have read South Carolina Wildlife, you'll recognize that from the Wildlife Watchers articles and he's written some other books, and he got a new book out, and he made the mistake of calling me, and I answered him, and now he's on the show. So I want to welcome Rob Simbeck to Woods and Water, South Carolina. Rob, thanks for taking a few minutes of your time and being on the show.
Roger and Taylor, thank you so, so much. I've been looking forward to this, and I can't wait for us to get as knee-deep or hip-deep as we need to get. And Roger and Taylor together, you may know that Roger Taylor is in Queen.
That's
when you say Roger and Taylor together.
And that just goes back to his long career in the music industry. You've been around a long time, Rob. Not to say that you're old, but you've been around the music industry a long time, and you've rubbed shoulders. My goodness, if you go to your website and click on the artist bios, I mean, it's a couple of screens long and four columns deep, and there's not many people on there who have sung on the radio that you haven't talked to.
Well, I go back, as far as age, I saw the Rolling Stones with Stevie Wonder opening in 1972. I saw the Allman Brothers with Duane.
Oh, wow.
So that's how long I've been around.
Yeah.
And Led Zeppelin, one of the early tours. But I go back to an era where everything was on the radio on the same station. You would go from the Beatles to Dean Martin to the Rolling Stones to the Singing Nun to, you know, Sinatra. And I've loved all kinds of music all my life. And I decided early on, I was in a band when I was 12, and I always loved music, but I figured out as a teenager that there were people getting paid to write too.
Okay.
They wrote science fiction stories. They wrote news stories, and that always appealed to me. And I've done both pretty much all my life. And as you are talking about it, I spent 25 years with Bob Kingsley doing his interviews and writing part of the show. And I mean, that mixed music and writing as well as I ever could have imagined. At the same time, I was writing stories for South Carolina Wildlife, for Field and Stream, for a lot of places. And so, yes, I've been around on the planet for a long time. And country music has been my sweet spot for a long time. I heard everybody from Johnny Cash to just all of the great country singers,
sure,
really, and Waylon growing up on those AM stations. And I became a songwriter, you know, from being in a band, and wrote at Combine Music, where Christofferson was, and Larry Gatlin, Tony Joe White, a lot of great people, and have mixed the two ever since. It's been a lot of fun. It's been exciting.
It sounds it. I mean, just listening to you, you can tell this is where you wanted to be.
Yes, and I got to tell you, that song that you opened up with.
Yes,
the guy singing that is Scott Springs, who's a great Nashville R&B singer, and my buddy and co-writer on that one. My co-writer was Frank Michaels, but another guy I write with, J.D. Shelburne, sings a country version of that that's really, really good. You might find him too.
Yeah. And, I took it right off your website under songwriting. You've got them listed there. And I told my wife, I said, hey, I need some holiday songs in and out. And she went through and kind of picked the ones she liked, and she has very good taste. And in fact, I'm not going to go there. But anyway, she has good taste in music, at least. And so I let her pick it, and she picked some good stuff, and it's right off your website. So just a man of many talents. I got to ask you, what instrument did you play in the band?
I played guitar.
Okay.
I was in the first rock band played guitar and shared vocals with another guy. Then I was in a folk band in high school. I was in an acoustic duo. We had a record deal in Pittsburgh many, many years ago. In fact, my partner at the time dropped out of college because it looked good. Yeah. And then it didn't go anywhere. And he had a full scholarship. So you can imagine what his parents thought when he threw that away for the music business.
And I would say that you probably made the better decision just based on the way you talk about that.
I did stay in school. Okay. I do have a degree in poetry writing.
Oh,
what
wow.
That's worth. Yeah.
Well, how did you get involved in the outdoors? I mean, it's because listening to you talk about music and looking at your website, that is where the majority of your life has been spent. But on the side, and probably a lot of the people in the outdoor industry know this, you're very talented writing the outdoors, and it's all you got to do is go to South Carolina Wildlife, look at the Wildlife Watchers, and look at all the articles in there about all the different animals, birds, and that sort of thing listed there. But you just said that you picked up that people were getting paid for writing and all. Take us through that, starting to write, and then how you got involved in the outdoors and the outdoor industry and writing.
I grew up outside a small town in Pennsylvania. The town was called St. Mary's. It's in the mountains. We, you know, every now and then a bear would wander through town. In fact, one of the last times I was there, as I was leaving town, I saw a bear coming through somebody's yard and crossing the road, and I got a quick picture and a half. I mean, the half picture was half the bear, literally. And and so I was familiar with the outdoors. I mean, it was in the era where your parents said, you know, get home before dark.
Okay.
And we played in the creek, you know, caught crayfish. We'd make our own, you know, tomahawks and slingshots and stuff like that. And it was a great growing up. And so I was pretty familiar with a lot of wildlife stuff. But the thing that turned the writing toward the outdoors was Debbie. My better half and I met back in 1987. And as we dated, we'd often go for walks in the woods or on picnics or things. And I realized pretty quickly that she knew every bird and tree and rock and weed out there. She could name everything. She knew what it did, whether you could eat it, all that stuff. And so as I was following her around, I decided, why don't I pay attention and see what I can learn here? And so the first article that I did while we were dating was called Notes from a Birdwatcher's Friend. And it was basically what I was learning and how dumb I felt walking around the outdoors with somebody who knew so much. And it was a humor piece. And the good thing about state wildlife magazines like South Carolina Wildlife is that 35 states have them, and they don't compete with each other. So I sold that piece 12 different times. And I thought, why don't I hang on to Debbie and outdoor writing? And so we are still together, lo these many years later, and she is my first set of eyeballs when I put something together, and she'll say, okay, professor, you've got to tone this one down a little bit, or she'll say, hey, you can make that more interesting than that. In fact, on the cover of the new book, The Southern Wildlife Watcher, there is a picture of a hummingbird and a fox.
Right.
And she looked at me and said, that is one scrawny fox. They should find one that's better at catching squirrels and rabbits.
He's just a teenager. He's got big ears and a small nose. He's just a teenager.
Exactly. So she's where I learned.
Wow. And I'm glad you put it in that order. You decided to keep her and the outdoor writing. And the writing.
Exactly. Yeah. I know where my bread is buttered.
Man, don't we all?
So once you figured out that I can write about this and I enjoy it, how did you balance that with your work you did in the music industry?
There's actually more to it than that, because I used to write a lot about business. In fact, a couple of my books are ghost-written stories of business people, one of whom, Cal Turner, was former CEO of Dollar General, and I wrote his memoir with him.
Goodness.
And so there are several different areas that I did, and I would, whenever projects came up, you know, I'd meet somebody or hear about something or I'd check something out. If it looked interesting, I didn't care what it was. Which way it went, and most things went toward music or the outdoors. And so the balance always seemed to come by, goodness, just picking what appealed to me, what I thought I could tell a story about. This book, like so many books, is simply a collection of pieces that amount to, hey, guess what I saw?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you put that together with some solid information and hope that you can interest a publisher.
Yeah. Well, the book, and we'll mention this in this segment just because this is really what the whole interview is about, although we're having a good time. It's The Southern Wildlife Watcher, Notes of a Naturalist by Rob Simbeck. It's, and we got about a minute here, Rob, maybe a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. It's not a dictionary of the outdoors.
Yeah, and it's not a field guide. It's not one that you carry out as you're looking at things, but it's more what you would, if you and I are having a conversation in front of the fireplace in a cabin or a lodge somewhere, or maybe just sitting back on the deck after a hike in the woods and just talking back and forth about the animals that we'd seen, stories we can tell about our encounters with nature. That's what this is. It's a collection of 36 pieces, about 36 different critters, where we just talk stories and then we bring in an expert to make sure we've got all our data tied down so that the natural history can be laid out. That's more what it is.
And I listened to a podcast you done earlier and you said you had leaned on somewhere like 80 naturalists and professionals to help you get through this thing.
Yeah. There's at least one or two for every piece. And originally they were all, cause I was doing it in South Carolina, experts, biologists from South Carolina, professors. And then when the book decided to go throughout the South, from Texas to Virginia and from Florida up to Missouri, we brought in experts from all over the place. I had a lot of fun doing the interviews and then weaving it into just what I knew or what Debbie knew.
There you go. Well, let's take a break. Yeah. Going to have some more Rob Simbeck music on the way out, and we'll be back with more Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side. Y'all hang on.
Chilly heads down here. When it's chilly, Hank and Willie keep him going strong. Till Christmas comes along, Santa singing country. Till Christmas comes along, Santa singing country. I want snow for Christmas.
Uh-oh,
baby,
Taylor.
Let it fall. Let the night be
one of your favorite subjects.
Imagine having snow on Christmas.
Yeah, you live in the wrong part of the United States for that.
I actually looked at something today.
Yes.
I got a notification from my weather app. It said, what are your odds of a white Christmas? And I looked and
zero.
I said, there's no way. And I looked, sure enough, it's all over Northwest.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. It's okay. South Carolina's a great state to live in.
It is.
Rob, you'll have snow for Christmas.
Well, normally I would be in Wisconsin for Christmas this year. And growing up in Pennsylvania, there were years back in the 60s when we had snow from Halloween to Easter.
Oh, wow.
The ground was never bare. Christmas, I don't remember Christmas before 1970 when there wasn't snow on the ground.
Wow.
Up there. And, you know, the downside is if you're a kid, it's great.
I mean,
we had snow forts where you could literally crawl under the entire front yard. It would be, you know, three feet deep, and the snow plows would make it so there was 8 or 9 feet deep at the, down at the road.
Yeah.
And what also went with that was there were two mornings in 1961 and 1963 when I walked to school and it was 40 degrees below zero.
Oh, my gracious.
Are we supposed to believe that? You know, my parents always used to tell me, and they lived here in South Carolina, I had to walk up through the snow uphill both directions, barefooted.
Well, we did that too. And the potato, you take two hot potatoes and put them in your pocket to keep you warm going. And then when they cooled off, you eat them for lunch.
Never heard that one before. That's a great one. That's a great one. If you missed part of the last segment, we're talking to Rob Simbeck, who has spent his life writing, whether it's in the outdoor industry, whether it's country music side, the music side, bios, ghostwriting, or whatever. Rob, you've got another book out here, and I think you've got somewhere around 21 or 22 books out there. that are either
number 22.
Yeah, that are either yours or partly yours or edited by you. And you've got another one. This is called The Southern Wildlife Watcher, Notes of a Naturalist. And give us a little background about the book itself. I mean, when you think about writing a book about the outdoors, what's that process all about?
Well, this one, I was fortunate. Probably the easiest way to write a book is to put together a collection of pieces that you already have.
Okay.
And one of the easiest ways is my very first book was called Tennessee State Symbols. And it was a collection of articles I had done for a magazine called The Tennessee Conservationist about the state bird, the state capital, the state tree, the state rock, all that stuff. There were 30-some symbols. Okay. And over the course of several years, I did that and then put them together into a book. And with this one, back in 1994, I was writing for a lot of state wildlife magazines. Linda Renshaw was the editor of South Carolina Wildlife. And she called me one day and said, I would really like a column that just was a close-up of a critter each issue.
Okay.
Just, you know, you or I or the two of us together will pick something, and I'd want you to make it interesting and also have all the good solid information about it. So she really came up with the template with how to do this.
Wow.
And she even sent me, she mailed me old snail mail, a copy of a piece in a Wyoming magazine that she really liked. And it was a guy, you know, talking about being out and accidentally stumbling across a prairie chicken. And it was, you know, it was open with a fun story and then gave all the good information. So I've been doing those. This last year was the last one. I've been doing it for 25 years. Got to go from the housefly to humans. I actually did one on Homo sapiens.
Yeah.
with the same approach.
Okay.
But the great thing about a state magazine like South Carolina Wildlife is that they really take pride in how it looks. The editing is always great. And so it was a home for a long time. I love the interaction I had with people who'd write in. And so a few years back, I thought, I really would love to put these together into a book. And the University of South Carolina Press was kind enough to like the idea. And so really it was a matter of from 150 or 170, whatever it was, pieces through the years, picking 36 that I thought got a little bit of a flair for everything. So it's divided up into 12 from the air, 12 from the land, and 12 from the water. And it goes from houseflies and earthworms to bobcats and bald eagles. And the thing for me that always made it fun was that no matter how much I thought I knew about an animal I'd seen, you know, like the robin pretty much every day of my life, there was always something to learn. And one of the most fascinating things for me is that neither the housefly nor most species of earthworm are native to North America. They were brought here. They're imports. The way dandelions are imports and starlings, so are houseflies. They were not native to North America. We brought them here from Asia. And earthworms came in the ballast that got shoveled into ships to help with the weight distribution. And so there was nothing I could write about that didn't hold a surprise for me someplace. And that's really what I wanted to capture. Because, again, this is a conversation where I'm just imagining sitting, you know, with you guys around a fire, and we're all just telling stories. And mine happened to be about the animals, some you see every day, some you hardly ever see, like manatees or great white sharks. But they're all fascinating.
I know. I read a section about the bald eagle, and I love how you worded it. Talk a little bit about that section, because that was fascinating
for you.
Yeah, it was.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember what I said about them.
That and the turkey.
Yeah, it was talking about Ben Franklin.
He thought, and you know, it's tongue in cheek. It's hard to tell how serious he was being then, but he said, you know, we picked as a symbol for our country a bird, which while it looks great, will basically sit in a tree and wait for something else to catch a fish and then go steal it from him. It's not like he's, you know, hardworking or anything else. I think he's probably bad moral character. Whereas a turkey is a very noble bird, very intelligent bird thing. And Ben was good in a lot of directions. And the scientific part of bald eagles is that they're a great representation of what can happen when human beings say, hey, we've had a bad impact on this creature. Let's see if we can't rectify that. It's one of the great success stories to where there were hardly any bald eagle nests in the lower 48 states.
Right.
And it was DDT, which is great for killing mosquitoes, mm-hmm. also goes up through the food chain. And one of the things that it does is thins eggs on birds because they're eating fish that have eaten smaller fish that have eaten plankton or eaten, you know, the small vegetation. And those poisons go all the way up through. And so eagles would sit on nests and the eggs would break.
Right.
And so you can't sustain very long that way. And so, you know, one great environmental success story is that we were able to reverse that. We were able to change some of our practices, find alternatives when we needed to kill mosquitoes. And we've got healthy eagle populations. Just watching them in Tennessee, where I've lived for a long time, has been just so heartening to see them come back. And everybody gets to share that. And there are lots of other places where we can do that.
Oh, yeah. And in 2011, I took my oldest daughter to Alaska. And one of the things I really wanted was to see an eagle. You know, a few around I'd seen from time to time here in South Carolina. But, you know, you think going to Alaska, well, I'm just going to be, you know, well, bald eagles will be everywhere. Well, they weren't everywhere. They were following the salmon, and I wasn't at the right place at the right time. And I think I saw one sitting on a light pole in Homer, Alaska. I was trout fishing on the Anchor River and had one soar down the river, which was really the coolest experience I had with one because he was not more than 15 feet from me. And it sounded like a fighter jet coming down the river, and he just passed me going downstream. And I came home, and my cousin was in Charleston. I went down to Charleston and saw 9 at Bear Island. It's like that distribution. Taylor, we've seen them up on Lake Bowen right here mm-hmm. beside the house
yep.
over the last year fishing. So you're right. There is tremendous story of, you know, just changing the way we do things. And now we've got a national bird. It's pretty much evident in all the lower 48 states.
Yeah. And one of the places you want to consider getting away to sometime is Real Foot Lake in the northwest
yes.
corner of Tennessee.
Yep.
I've seen as many as 200 there.
Really?
Oh, my word.
Yep. I've always wanted to go duck hunting at Real Foot. Never made it up there, though.
That's the place. Yeah. Keep it on the list.
Okay. Keep it on the list. My list gets longer, and I don't knock many things off of it. That's the problem.
Well, you can knock some off my list, Daddy.
I've already knocked off a couple off your list,
just
young lady.
Alaska.
Okay, well, yeah, I made a second trip to Alaska with the second one, and it was just as good as the first one. So next one I'm going back is going to be all fishing and all about me. And you're staying home.
Sure.
Keep that list growing, Taylor, while he's got those daddy things going.
No. She's
you're the one that says you want to spend more time with me.
I'd like to spend more time with you, but time in my reference does not equal money as it does in your mind.
Well.
So there. Uh-huh. I mean, she's got all these, you know, elk in Montana and brown bear in Alaska thoughts. And
I took off zebra in Africa, so
I know you did, and you got Alaska in return.
Count your blessings.
Oh man, well Rob, I told you we'd chew up some time. Let's go to some music, a break. We'll be back and talk a little bit more about the book, and then some country music stuff. So y'all hang on, back with more Rob Simbeck and Woods and Water South Carolina on the other side.
You'll be sliding down your chimney later on tonight. Be sure to leave some cookies and milk out on a tray. It won't be there come morning, but that man's on his way. Look out, kids, it's Christmas Eve. The fat man's on his way. Not just carols or the joyful songs we're singing, or a wreath of holly placed upon your door. It's not just
Rob. I don't know who. I know you wrote some of these with some people and all, but I mean the guys that are singing and playing this music, they do a really good job of it.
Nashville has some of the best demo singers on the planet, and and that's one of them. Frank, Scott Spring sang the first one. Our buddy Dave, whose last name is escaping me right now, sang that one and the second one you played. And then Frank, my co-writer on all of these so far, sang that The Fat Man's on His Way.
But great stuff.
You can't swing a cat without hitting a great demo singer in Nashville, male and female.
And I like swing.
And they're the ones who go on. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where, everyone, Trisha Yearwood, to Kathy Mattea in the old days, and, everybody started out as a demo singer.
Incredible. You just look at some of the people that you have rubbed shoulders with, and I'm sure, Taylor, you're going to get to a few of these here in a second. But the real reason Rob is on with us, Taylor, back to the subject matter here, is he's written a book. Well, he wrote a bunch of articles and condensed them into a book, 36 of them, 12 on land, 12 in the air, 12 in the water. And it's not a dictionary, folks, but it's like Rob said in the first segment. So, if you're sitting around a campfire, sitting at the kitchen island right here, we got a fly coming around here that I'm going to get rid of here shortly. we have a groundhog in the backyard that we see, squirrels and stuff like that. So it's just a collection of stuff you might see in any given day and stuff you might never see. And it's really interesting from the story about the eagles to wolf spiders, which I tell mom are good spiders. She likes for me to kill every spider, and I don't do it because I grew up in a country home that was, the Chester House, and it's, 100 and something years old, and we lived with nature.
Literally.
And, it was a good way to grow up. But anyway, about the book. So you got a bunch of endorsement quotes from a lot of people, but you've got a lot of endorsement quotes from country music singers.
Yeah, they overlap a lot, country music and the outdoors. I mean, you take a guy like Blake Shelton, who I've known forever and worked with a lot. Big hunter. He made sure once he had some money in the bank to buy a big spread in Oklahoma. And, one of the endorsement quotes came from Kix Brooks, who, he rides cutting horses. He's always out with his four-wheeler and stuff. The late Charlie Daniels, he was someone I'd known and worked with over the years, and he was kind enough to give an endorsement quote not long before he died. Mm-hmm. Leanne Womack, just an incredible singer. And, they grew up, part of what defines many country singers is that they grew up in the country.
Sure.
They appreciate nature like people in other genres might not. And so it was really, it meant a lot to me that some of my friends in the business were willing to look over the book. And I said, if you like it, just give us a quote. And they did. And it just, there are great writers of all kinds. Sean Dietrich, who a lot of people know as Sean of the South. He's got a big following. Holly Gleason, who is a longtime music writer. Whit Gibbons, who has written Snakes of the East, Field Guides and things like that. So it's, you always hope for support from your friends and colleagues, and it was really nice in this case to get them.
With all that being said, and with all the knowledge you have about this subject, give us some advice on how we can become better wildlife watchers.
I think it starts with just the yard, just to be able to look out the window and appreciate that there is nothing so citified, but you won't see at least a pigeon, that you won't see at least, a sparrow or a starling. In Central Park in New York, you're going to see all kinds of stuff, especially for those of us who live in smaller cities or in suburbs or out in the country, just to be able to take a look out the window or take a walk around the yard and to recognize everything you see. A lot of people don't ever do that. And just think of how much poorer our lives are if we just see birds as opposed to seeing you know, robins and blue jays and white-throated sparrows and pileated woodpeckers and everything else, and be able to say, hey, that's what that is. And when the kids are growing up, to say, let's learn the names of everything here. And what kind of spider is that? What kind of garden spider is that? Or a wolf spider. And then to recognize that, you know, snakes are just another creature. They're not something to be feared and killed and that sort of thing. But to be respected and to see how they fit in with nature, which interweaves with itself. You know, everything is out there making a living one way or the other, and to look around the trees in the yard. And once we do that, the responsibility comes in knowing that if you put up bird feeders to help attract birds, that birds can pass along diseases, which they're more likely to do if you never wash that feeder. And so to know every so often to take down the feeder, wash it in bleach, put it back out so it's clean. And, you know, it's just responsibility. And to know that there are certain plants that you can plant that will draw more butterflies, and that it's better to plant things that were here in the first place, native plants, as opposed to invasive species which can take over. So being a responsible wildlife watcher starts with knowledge, and then it starts with what can I do in my own little way to give nature the best chance. I mean, what kind of poisons don't I want to put on my lawn and garden to, you know, so I don't have to kill insects needlessly? Is there a better way to do this? And all of that goes with just being a responsible citizen of planet Earth.
The book is The Southern Wildlife Watcher, Notes of a Naturalist by Rob Simbeck. Rob, I know there's a store here in town that's going to have a few copies. Tell us where they can get it here in the upstate of South Carolina and both online.
M. Judson Booksellers, okay, has got copies. They will fix you up. And I'm just a big proponent. If you've got a local bookstore, please
go buy from
them. Let them know that you appreciate them. A writer like me wants to find a reader like you, and bookstores, booksellers, are where it's personal, where they can say, hey, I've read something great, or there's a local author, and that sort of thing, and they know what a community is looking for. So M. Judson Booksellers, my friend Ashley over there, or any of the fine people.
Okay.
And then if you want to do it from home, they can help fix you up. And at the same time, if you Google Rob Simbeck, The Southern Wildlife Watcher, you will find somebody who will sell you the book.
Oh, yeah.
Again, start local, and you can find places online to buy it, too.
Okay.
And all of it's appreciated. And the University of South Carolina Press, if you go to their website, you can buy it from there, too, and see what else that they publish that they figure is of local interest to people, that people in South Carolina and the region will find useful and educational.
And when you buy the book, you got to read the foreword, which is by another great writer, Jim Cassada.
Jim Cassada, yes. Our old buddy. Yep. Jim, there are few people as knowledgeable about the outdoors and about the British monarchy and British history. And he was a soccer coach, and talk about a Renaissance man. Jim is there.
And knows everything you need to know about the Bryson City area of North Carolina.
You bet. And how to cook anything you find out there.
That's right. All right, Taylor, you've got about 3 minutes to exercise your country music in, you know, wide open. Go ahead.
Well, first,
you're rolled up, Taylor.
First of all, I mean, how did you even keep your nerves under control while you're talking to these people? Like Carrie Underwood and Blake Shelton, I don't understand.
I thought briefly about what it might be like to be a doctor when I was in high school, and I asked a friend of mine's father, who was a doctor, how do you get past a car wreck just not being horrified or grossed out? And he said, you treat it as a job, you're a professional, you've got something to do here, and you have to look at that as a body part that needs fixing. When I'm sitting, and it helps that I've known Blake forever. He used to have a turkey named Turkey, which was always worth talking about. And I've done his bio a whole bunch of times, interviewed him for Bob Kingsley's show. And he's just what he appears to be on TV. And so you just get comfortable pretty quickly. I'm trying to think of by the time I got to be doing country music, I'd already been a newspaper reporter and editor,
okay,
and a magazine editor, and had talked to people, and you just get used to it over the years. I mean, it's after, you know, after so many times interviewing, there are very few people who can throw you. I was as happy to talk to Carrie's mother as Carrie. I figured there's got to be some good dirt here.
Mom's place to look.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. Looking at the list of people, I grew up absolutely obsessed with Carrie Underwood. All of, I had like a little like iPod and
an old
all
one
of the songs on there were Carrie Underwood. And I'm looking through it now and I just, oh my word.
It's anybody and everybody.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Let me ask you this. We got about a minute left. Purest voice you've ever heard as far as speaking and talking to you?
The purest voice?
Yeah.
Well, when you first said it, before you said talking, the smoothest glass voice is Leon Womack's. I mean, just as an instrument, that voice has no sand, no grit. It's just a gorgeous voice. The John Barry was one of the strongest singers on the male side. He had his hits a while ago. But as far as, you know, people who are fun to talk to, going back to Haggard, always had great stories. Waylon was really, really fun to talk to.
Cool.
And Carrie's got that great speaking voice too, if that's what you talking. Just fun to, you know, to listen to sit in a room with.
Rob, it's been an honor to have you on the show. Best of luck with your book. I've enjoyed reading
it. It's been my pleasure.
We got about 10 seconds left. We'll catch up with you again. And till then, folks, make time to get out there.
Take the back roads when you can.
Don't forget the camera. See you back next week. More Woods and Water, South Carolina.
Yes, I'm gone to Carolina.